Have you ever wondered why your brain sometimes makes you see things that aren't there? Or why you can't resist that late-night snack even when you're trying to diet? Lisa Feldman Barrett's 7.5 Lessons About the Brain offers fascinating insights into these everyday mysteries. This slim volume has become a favorite among tech entrepreneurs like Mark Zuckerberg and psychologists alike, climbing bestseller lists while making complex neuroscience accessible to everyone. Unlike traditional brain books focused on pathology or abstract functions, Barrett reveals how our 3-pound organ actively constructs our reality moment by moment. Her work has been featured in TED Talks with millions of views and represents a revolutionary shift in how we understand the brain, not as a passive receiver of information, but as a predictive organ, constantly shaping our experience of the world. The book's cultural impact extends beyond science, influencing fields from education to business leadership, as it fundamentally challenges how we think about human nature. 500 million years ago, Earth's oceans teemed with creatures like the amphioxus, essentially a stomach on a stick with a rudimentary nervous system, but no proper brain. Unlike you, with your sophisticated brain that creates thoughts, emotions, and dreams, this ancient creature managed just fine without one. So why did our complex brains evolve at all? Contrary to popular belief, thinking wasn't the primary driver of brain evolution. Our brains evolved primarily to regulate our bodies, to efficiently manage resources like water, salt, glucose, and hormones. This process, called allostasis, involves predicting and preparing to meet bodily needs before they arise. The evolutionary story begins during the Cambrian period, when purposeful hunting transformed life on Earth. Predators and prey developed sophisticated sensory systems, actual vision instead of just light detection, better touch sensation, and vibration detection. The critical question became, is that blob good to eat, or will it eat me? Creatures with better environmental awareness survived and reproduced. Beyond sensing, animals evolved more sophisticated movement capabilities, darting toward food or away from threats. Evolution favored those who performed these tasks efficiently. Energy efficiency became crucial for survival, functioning like a budget, where each action represents a withdrawal and activities like eating represent deposits. For this body budgeting, prediction beat reaction. Animals that prepared movements before predators struck survived better than those who merely reacted. This isn't conscious decision-making, but an internal process that launches movements based on predicted value. As bodies grew more complex, with intricate internal systems, cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, they needed a command center, a brain, to manage thousands of accounts in the body's complex budget. Your brain's most important job isn't rationality, emotion, or creativity. It's controlling your body by predicting energy needs before they arise, so you can survive. Everything from memories to hallucinations, ecstasy to shame, serves this central mission. Whether you're drinking coffee to finish a project or learning difficult skills for future benefit, under the hood, every thought, feeling, and interaction represents deposits or withdrawals in your metabolic budget, the key to understanding your brain, staying healthy, and living a meaningful life. For over 2 millennia, humans have embraced the compelling narrative that we have 3 competing inner forces: basic instincts, emotions, and rational thought. This ancient idea, dating back to Plato, was later mapped onto brain evolution as the triune brain theory. This popular model suggests we evolved from reptiles to mammals to rational humans, with distinct brain layers for each stage: a reptilian brain for survival, a limbic system for emotions, and a neocortex for rational thought. This story is completely wrong. The triune brain concept, proposed by Paul MacLean and popularized by Carl Sagan, suggests good behavior comes from rationality overriding primitive impulses. Despite being thoroughly rejected by modern neuroscience, this model persists in popular culture, self-help books, and even some educational settings. In reality, brains don't evolve by adding new layers. Instead, they reorganize as they grow larger. Modern genetic analysis reveals that neurons that look different between species often contain the same genes, indicating shared evolutionary origins. As brains expand, regions segregate and integrate in more complex arrangements, like how a rat's single somatosensory region corresponds to four regions in humans performing similar functions. All mammalian brains, and likely those of reptiles, birds, and some fish, follow a single manufacturing plan. The difference lies in timing. The developmental stages that produce certain brain structures run longer in some species than others. Humans don't have unique brain parts. Our cerebral cortex is larger because the developmental stage that produces it runs longer than in other species. The human cerebral cortex isn't even special in proportion to our brain size. All mammals have relatively large cortices for their brain size. Our cortex is simply scaled up from smaller-brained primates and scaled down from elephants and whales. If a monkey's brain grew to human size, its cortex would match ours in proportion. Humans aren't the pinnacle of evolution. While we build skyscrapers and create art, other animals possess abilities that would be superpowers to us: flight, extraordinary strength, limb regeneration. Even bacteria survive in environments that would kill humans instantly. Natural selection didn't aim toward human development. We're just one interesting animal with adaptations suited to particular environments. Despite scientific evidence, the triune brain myth persists partly because it flatters us. It awards humans a best species trophy by suggesting our rational thought triumphed over our animal nature. This feeds into Western culture's explanation of behavior as rationality versus emotion, where rational behavior is considered moral and responsible. But rationality isn't simply the absence of emotion. Sometimes emotions are rational, like fear in dangerous situations, and thinking can be irrational, like endless social media scrolling. From a body budgeting perspective, rationality means efficiently managing resources for success in your environment. Even seemingly irrational behaviors like PTSD responses might be rational body budgeting strategies that haven't adjusted to new environments. This perspective challenges foundational assumptions in law, economics, and politics that separate rationality from emotion. Throughout history, humans have used metaphors to understand the brain, from Aristotle's cooling chamber to the medieval soul house to modern but equally metaphorical concepts like left-right brain or fast-slow thinking systems. But your brain is literally a network, 128 billion neurons connected as a single, massive, flexible structure that creates your mind. Each neuron resembles a tree, with bushy dendrites receiving signals, a trunk-like axon, and roots sending signals to other neurons through chemical synapses. This arrangement creates a brain network that's always active. Neurons constantly communicate rather than waiting for external stimulation. The network balances communication efficiency against energy costs through a hub structure similar to the global air travel system. Like airports, most neural clusters handle local traffic, while hub clusters coordinate long-distance communication across the brain. This structure evolved because it's powerful yet energy-efficient. Hubs are critical infrastructure. Their damage is associated with depression, schizophrenia, dyslexia, chronic pain, and other disorders. Your brain network changes continuously. Neurotransmitters like glutamate and serotonin rapidly alter signal flow across synapses, while neuromodulators adjust broader patterns of activity. Slower structural changes occur through neuronal birth and death and connection strengthening or weakening. This plasticity encodes learning throughout life, allowing your single brain structure to create trillions of activity patterns. Neurons can perform multiple roles and change conversation partners. The visual cortex also processes hearing and touch and can be repurposed when visual input is absent. No neuron has a single psychological function, though some are more likely to contribute to certain functions than others. Different groups of neurons can produce the same result through degeneration, like reaching for an object twice using different neural patterns. Complexity is the brain's ability to configure itself into an enormous number of distinct neuropatterns. Like the world's air travel system, a complex brain has many interacting parts that coordinate to create multitudes of activity patterns. This complexity enables abstract thinking, language, imagination, creativity, and the ability to contemplate beyond our immediate surroundings. Higher complexity means better memory reconstruction, greater creativity in novel situations, faster adaptation to different environments, and more resilience to injury. Human brains aren't the only complex brains. Octopuses and birds also demonstrate complex behaviors despite different neural organizations. Understanding the brain as a complex network helps explain human mind creation without requiring an oversized neocortex or special brain parts. If human brain evolution has a crowning achievement, it's the complexity of its crown, not its size or structure. Human babies are born with brains under construction, taking about 25 years to complete their wiring, unlike many animals born with more fully developed brains. This incomplete wiring allows the brain to be shaped by both physical and social environments, creating a powerful evolutionary advantage. The nature versus nurture distinction is illusory. Genes and environment are deeply entwined, like lovers in a fiery tango. A baby's genes are guided by the surrounding environment. Vision develops properly only with light exposure, sound localization depends on ear shape, and even additional genes enter through bacteria from the outside world. The social environment is equally crucial, as caregivers holding babies at the right distance teach facial recognition, and exposure to objects trains visual systems to recognize edges and corners. As information enters the newborn brain, neural connections develop through two processes, tuning and pruning. Tuning strengthens frequently used connections. Dendrites become bushier and axons develop thicker myelin coating, making signals travel faster. Meanwhile, pruning eliminates unused connections, following the principle of if you don't use it, you lose it. This continuous process is driven by external stimuli and bodily development, continuing throughout life. Three key examples demonstrate how infant brains wire themselves through interaction with the world. First, caregivers regulate a baby's body budget, feeding, sleep, temperature, until the brain gradually develops its own regulatory abilities. Second, babies develop focused attention with caregiver guidance, transforming their initial broad awareness into a spotlight that distinguishes relevant from irrelevant stimuli. Third, sensory development occurs as babies' brains tune to frequently encountered stimuli, like language sounds or familiar faces, while pruning away neural connections for rarely encountered ones, explaining why early exposure to diverse languages and faces creates lasting advantages. Beyond single senses, babies learn sensory integration, combining sight, sound, touch, taste, smell, and internal sensations into unified experiences. A newborn initially can't recognize his mother by face, but may know her by sound or smell. Gradually, his brain integrates these sensory patterns into meaningful wholes, creating the neural foundation for attachment and feelings of trust. Little brains require social input to develop typically. The tragic case of Romanian orphanages in the 1960s demonstrates how babies deprived of social interaction develop intellectual impairments, language problems, attention difficulties, and stunted physical growth. Their brains developed smaller than average with fewer cortical connections. Even less severe neglect can cause gradual damage as unused wiring gets pruned away. Poverty similarly affects brain development through inadequate nutrition, disrupted sleep, and temperature regulation issues, particularly impacting the prefrontal cortex and perpetuating cycles of disadvantage. Despite the risks of requiring social input for proper brain development, this arrangement offers a crucial evolutionary advantage. Each brain becomes optimized for its particular environment as caregivers curate a baby's physical and social niche. When that baby grows up, they perpetuate that niche by passing culture to the next generation. This process is frugal because evolution doesn't need to encode all wiring instructions in genes. It offloads much of the job to the social world. We have the kind of nature that requires nurture, with genes that need a physical and social environment to produce a finished brain. Your brain doesn't simply react to the world. It actively predicts and constructs your reality. Like the former Rhodesian soldier who mistook a shepherd boy with a herding stick for a guerrilla fighter with an AK-47, your brain combines incoming sensory data with past experiences to create your perception. This predictive process happens automatically and largely outside your awareness, often before sensory data even arrives. Your brain doesn't passively receive sensory information like a camera, it actively constructs what you experience. When faced with ambiguous sense data, your brain draws on memories to make meaning and determine appropriate actions. This explains why the soldier saw guerrilla fighters instead of a boy with cows. His brain asked what was likely, based on his circumstances, being in the woods with a rifle, heart pounding, and produced guerrilla fighters as the answer. Most everyday experiences, from seeing faces in crowds to feeling phantom phone vibrations, are carefully controlled hallucinations constructed by your brain. Contrary to common sense, your brain predicts before it senses. When you drink water, you feel less thirsty within seconds, long before the water reaches your bloodstream, because your brain predicts the sensory consequences. Similarly, just imagining your favorite food can make you salivate as your brain activates the same neural patterns involved in actually tasting it. Your brain launches multiple competing predictions about what might happen next, with the winning prediction becoming your action and sensory experience. When your brain predicts correctly, incoming sensory data merely confirms what your neurons are already firing for. When predictions are wrong, like the soldier seeing fighters instead of a boy, your brain has two options: learn by updating its predictions based on sensory data, or stick with the original prediction despite contradictory evidence. The latter often happens when survival seems at stake, as brains are wired for survival, not accuracy. Perhaps most surprisingly, your brain initiates actions before you're consciously aware of them. While you experience sensing first and acting second, your brain actually prepares for action first, routing predictions to your sensory systems to anticipate the consequences. This raises profound questions about free will and responsibility. When you act on autopilot, biting nails or saying something regrettable, your brain has employed its predictive powers without your feeling of agency, yet you bear more responsibility than you think. The predictions driving your actions come from your past experiences. While you can't change your past, you can change how your brain predicts in the future by investing in new ideas, experiences, and activities. This is a form of free will, not necessarily changing behavior in the heat of the moment, but changing predictions before that moment arrives. With practice, automatic behaviors can be reshaped, giving you more control over future actions. This control comes with responsibility, not blame for hardships, but recognition that sometimes you're responsible because you're the only one who can create change. As a social species, humans cooperate and regulate each other's body budgets, the resources our brains manage daily. Throughout life, we make deposits into and withdrawals from others' body budgets, often outside our awareness, with profound implications for health and society. Our brains change their wiring through plasticity after new experiences, especially those involving other people. This co-regulation has measurable effects: synchronized breathing and heartbeats between people who care for each other, mirrored movements in an unconscious dance, and physical responses to others' actions. When we hold hands with someone in pain, we literally lessen their suffering. Being social brings advantages. We live longer with close relationships and work better with trusted colleagues. But there are disadvantages too. Persistent loneliness can shorten lifespan by years, and empathy requires more metabolic effort for unfamiliar people, which may explain why we create echo chambers of similar views. Words literally regulate human bodies. Many brain regions processing language also control bodily systems supporting your body budget, guiding heart rate, adjusting glucose, and changing immune system chemicals. This wiring appears in other animals too, like birds. While occasional stress from words can be manageable and even strengthening, like exercise, chronic verbal aggression creates harmful biological effects regardless of political affiliation. Studies show persistent verbal nastiness can make you sick, affect metabolism, adding 104 calories to meals after stress, and even make healthy fats metabolize like unhealthy ones. This creates a fundamental dilemma. We need other humans for survival, yet we value individual freedoms. The solution isn't restricting speech, but recognizing that freedom comes with responsibility. We pay collective costs through healthcare expenses, ineffective government, reduced innovation, and weakened democracy when we ignore our social interdependence. Human brains create many different kinds of minds, not just individual variations, but fundamentally different mental structures. These variations exist across cultures and within them, preserving the evolution ability of our species and making us less likely to be wiped out by environmental changes. Despite variation being normal and beneficial, people find it uncomfortable, preferring the idea of a single universal human nature. We try to organize this variation by sorting people into neat categories with labels, personality types, cultural tendencies, or distinctions between normal and abnormal. The Myers-Briggs type indicator exemplifies this categorization impulse, though its scientific validity is questionable. In reality, the human mind has no universal defining features. Features unique to humans exclude some humans, like infants, while features all humans share appear in other animals too. Even so, some mental features are widespread because they're useful, like the ability to have relationships and experience affect, mood. Affect, ranging from pleasant to unpleasant and idle to activated, comes from your brain summarizing your body's internal state. It serves as a barometer for your body budget, but lacks the precision of a specific app or smartwatch. Your kind of mind is just one among many, and you can modify it through chemicals like caffeine or alcohol for short-term changes, or through new experiences for longer-lasting rewiring. Acculturation, adapting to a new culture, represents an extreme form of plasticity that can be challenging, but demonstrates our brain's adaptability. No kind of mind is inherently better than another. Some variations are simply more tailored to their environment. Human nature is really many human natures, all emerging from our complex brains wiring themselves to their surroundings. Most of your life takes place in a made-up world. Cities with invented names, money represented by paper or digital signals, and countless other social constructs. This social reality exists only in human brains, yet feels completely real to us. Unlike physical reality, rocks, trees, oceans, social reality can change dramatically if people simply change their minds, as when 13 British colonies became the United States in 1776. The boundary between social and physical reality is porous. Wine tastes better when believed expensive, and coffee labeled eco-friendly tastes better than identical unlabeled coffee. Our unique human ability to create social reality depends on five cognitive capacities: creativity, communication, copying, cooperation, and compression. Creativity allows us to invent concepts like national borders. Communication, especially through language, helps us efficiently share these ideas. Copying enables us to establish and transmit laws and norms across generations. Cooperation on a vast scale makes even simple acts like buying canned beans possible through complex human networks. Compression, the fifth capacity, allows humans to condense complex information into efficient summaries, like a detective creating a coherent narrative from multiple witness accounts. This neural compression process runs throughout the brain, with smaller neurons passing sense data to larger neurons that create increasingly abstract summaries, enabling us to think abstractly and create social reality. These five capacities work together to give humans our remarkable ability to create shared realities that coordinate behavior across millions of people who we'll never meet. From money to marriage, nations to corporations, these social constructions feel as real and immutable as mountains or oceans, yet they exist only because we collectively agree they do. This understanding gives us both responsibility and power. The knowledge that many aspects of our world can be reimagined and recreated if we choose to do so together. Our evolutionary journey from simple organisms to complex humans has given us brains that both empower and mislead us. These remarkable organs construct rich mental experiences that make us feel emotion and reason are in conflict when they're actually integrated aspects of the same system. Our brains are so complex, we resort to metaphors to understand them, and so skilled at rewiring that we mistake learned behaviors for innate traits. They hallucinate so effectively, we believe we see reality objectively when we're actually constructing our experience moment by moment. They regulate other brains invisibly while we presume independence, create diverse minds while we assume a single human nature, and convince us that our social inventions are natural laws. These beautiful deceptions have allowed us to create civilization while maintaining the illusion of individual autonomy. Despite not being the biggest or objectively best brain in the animal kingdom, our brain gives us both the capacity to build societies that span continents and to destroy each other with weapons of unimaginable power. It makes us capable of both extraordinary compassion and shocking cruelty. It creates art that moves us to tears and technologies that transform our planet. It connects us in ways no other species experiences, while simultaneously convincing us of our separateness. Understanding our brain's true nature doesn't diminish its wonder, it enhances it. Knowing that our perceptions are constructed rather than received, that our rationality is embodied rather than abstract, that our individuality exists within a network of social connection rather than apart from it, these insights don't make us less human. They help us appreciate what it means to be simply, imperfectly, gloriously human in all our complexity, with all our contradictions, and with all our potential for growth and change.